The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No.
You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I don't know if my cell phone has made my life easier or worse. A lot of ways. Allows me to contact anybody, anytime, any place, anywhere. Out in the road, I get lost, I get late, I have to call home. But I'll tell you what, being available 24/7. Well, people say, well, just turn it off. I can't. Oh, physically I can. Emotionally, I'm not sure. And therein lies the problem. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday. Typically, our Fridays are consumed with taking previously selected, and we are scrupulous about what we select, calls that I can talk more about. I either want to extrapolate from something they said, I want to go off in a different direction. Perhaps they bring up a broader subject that I'd like to address, not necessarily related to their particulars of their call. So we reserve those for Look Back Friday. Now, we don't always do that. Every so often, we throw in a Look Ahead Friday or a Look Sideways Friday at your phone calls. We'll do that, and I think, in the near future here. But for right now, this is a Look Back Friday. She just hurts me by the things she says. He's so hurtful. It just bothers me so much. I take it to heart. We got to ask the question. Why do these folks have the ability to hurt you by what they say? Obviously, not physically hurting you, okay? Not pushing you down, not kicking you, not pinching you in the arm. Although if you have a little kid, you might get some of that. But what is it about words that people say that can truly... And we're not talking they stung a little bit for 22 minutes. I had somebody email me just recently that said something I said bothered her, and it's been bothering her ever since, and that was 2 years ago. So what is it? Well, obviously, people we care about can say things to truly upset us, to hurt our feelings, to make us feel put down. That happens all the time. If I were to pick one reason why relationships go sour, it's because of that stuff that is said. But you got to go a little deeper on this. You do. You got to ask the question, what is it about me? More specifically, about the way that I'm hearing or interpreting what they just said. Let me find an example here. Let's say that a young mother is being criticized by her mother or her father or her sister or her brother about the way she's raising her children. Okay. Now, on one hand, one could say, I really wish they wouldn't say that. I don't like when they say that. Okay, that's reasonable enough, isn't it? I don't like it. But to take it much further and say, she really, really hurts me when she says that. I ask again. Why? What is it about, and I'm going to include me in this, my need to be respected, my need to be understood and uplifted, my need to be complimented. What is it? You know, in the prayer of St. Francis, he says, grant that I may not seek so much to be understood as to understand. He seems to be saying, don't make it too important that people understand you. Because, obviously, if they understood you, they'd be less likely to say the things they say. What is it? And I believe at the root of it, for many of us, me included, is how can they say that about me? I'm not like that. Don't they see that? That's a mean thing to say. I don't deserve that. You say to yourself, no, that's not it. That's not it. What they say is just mean, and it would bother anybody. What they say is a put down, and it would hurt anybody. No, not necessarily. The degree that it hurts depends upon a couple of things. How much weight you give it. Obviously, someone you love deeply can hurt you more than someone you could care less about, in terms of their opinion anyway. And how much are you involved in your own, I'm going to use the word pride. I'm going to use it. Why? I think there's a straight line relationship. The quicker I am hurt by something you say, the quicker I am offended. The quicker that I react emotionally to something you say about me, I think the component of my pride is larger. You shouldn't be saying that to me. You hear what that says? Do you hear what that says? Because I do think that is the thought underlying much of the time when we get hurt. You shouldn't be saying that. Why? Well, it's not true. I don't deserve it. You're being unfair. Can't you see yourself? You're more that way than I am. I'm trying hard. You're not giving me credit. You're not giving me the benefit of the doubt. All the ways that we want them to understand us, they're not. Or they're not being charitable. But they should be, Dr. Ray. No, they shouldn't. No, they shouldn't. It is the way our Lord would want them to live if they follow our Lord and if they want to listen to him in their relations with people. You know as well as I do, we're very, very incomplete in doing that. So when they do these things, they say these things, you got to ask yourself two questions. One, is it true? That's really your only concern. Is it true? And you've got to really take a hard look, because by our fallen human nature, we don't want to look. We don't want to scrutinize ourselves. So that's the first thing. Is it true? The second thing is that you recognize that people can say anything at any time about anybody for any reason. They can do this. But she shouldn't do it. She's my mother. Wait a minute. What do you mean she shouldn't do it? She's your mother. She just did it. Well, a good loving mother wouldn't do that. Well, maybe a good, loving mother, as you would want her to be, wouldn't do that. But she did. That is the reality. See, I look at myself, and you gotta see some of the emails I get. They ain't pretty, all right? So, if that bothered me longer than the time it took to either read the email or sometimes respond to the email. Oh, by the way, just as an aside, the times I have responded and I try to assuage or explain or do what I can to not be defensive, more than 50% of the time, the person writes back even uglier. That'll tell you something. So given that, if I were hurt by that, I'd have to look at myself and say, why does that bother me? I want them to like me. I want them to think I'm a good guy. I want them to understand. I want them to be fair. That's not what I meant. How could they interpret it that way? I would do all that stuff. And the temptation is always there, and I got to beat it down. I got to. Because what I'm really saying is, you don't have a right to say anything that would bother me. You don't have a right to say anything that would hurt my feelings. You don't have a right to say anything that would criticize me. Yeah, you do. I may not like it, but you can say anything you want. So ask this question as I summarize all of this. If you are easily hurt by what people say, or more likely, you are recurrently hurt by someone in your life who says a lot of things that hurt you, be it a spouse, be it a parent, be it an adult child, whatever it is, instead of looking at them, you look at yourself and you say, what is it about me, about the way I'm looking at this, that is making me react this way? Because I must think I don't deserve it and I deserve to be treated better. And if I say that, if I say I deserve to be treated better, what I'm really saying is I'm a good person and they should recognize that. All righty. When we come back, let's see what we got here. Ed from Maine wants to talk about his relationship with his mother. And I think it's going to tie into what I just said, because typically these friction-filled relationships are accompanied by all kinds of friction-filled words.
Don't touch that dial. Dr. Ray will be back.
This Mother's Day, bless the Catholic mothers in developing countries who spend hours collecting drinking water, often from unsafe sources. With your support, Cross Catholic Outreach can provide these women and their children with access to clean, safe water. Help us lift the poor's burdens, protect their health, and restore their hope. Join by calling Cross Catholic Outreach at 888-766-2426 or visit crosscatholic.org/Ave Maria.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Thank you for joining me on The Doctor's Inn, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production of the Global Catholic EWTN Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications, which means I got bosses again. Boy, for the longest time, I worked without a boss except my wife and my five daughters. my five boys, I had to keep telling them that I am their father and that I do live in this house. They didn't seem to notice much at the time. All right, being this is Look Back Friday, we're going to talk to Ed, originally, when Ed called in a few months back from Maine. He had a relationship with his mother that just ain't going good.
The last, I'm 55 years old. I haven't had a good relationship with her since about the age of 12.
Yeah.
Yep. The last straw that broke the camel's back between her and I is when I went through a divorce. She looked at me and said, "You know your kids hate you. They don't want to see you." And I had her repeat it twice to make sure I knew I was understanding. I'm not a drug addict. Never was. Never even experimented. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an abuser. And she said that to me. I looked at her and I says, "This is why you and I don't get along. You make up stories, you tell my sisters, you tell me your friends, and it makes me look like a bleep jerk." And I said to her, "Have a good life." I went down the road about half a mile. I pulled over and I must have cried for 2 hours. And now she's calling me and leaving me messages. She says, "I don't know what's the matter with you, why you don't want to talk to me. I didn't do nothing," she says.
Ed.
So, Where do I go? Another thing I did, when my parents divorced, I went and worked for one of my cousins on my father's side of the family. And she went ballistic. And when I say she went ballistic, we had to get law enforcement involved because she was so nasty to me.
What, she hit you?
Nope. She was cocky and sassy, and she didn't hit me, but she was about to. She was frustrated because my father divorced her, and then I went and worked for my cousin.
You're telling me that your mother's not a very happy person.
I'm thinking she's not a very happy person.
Ed, how old is she?
78.
How much longer do you think she's going to be around?
Don't know. I don't know.
I think for your conscience, I think for your faith, for your peace, you want to be able to say, of all the people I know... my mother is among the most difficult, if not the most difficult. Okay. I got that. However, since I know that, I cannot let her have quite the power to make me feel rotten like I've been giving her all these years. She says bad stuff. She lies. And what's worse, she denies she even does it. She doesn't even recognize what she does.
Yeah. And she's been told by her Catholic friends, "Don't be surprised when your son turns his back on you."
Are you Catholic?
Oh, yeah. I go to church twice a week. And I've always gone to church.
My friend,
always
as valuable as going to church would be forgiving your mother. You're not allowed as a follower of Christ. You're not permitted to hold on to these grudges about things she said, about who she is, about how she tried to hurt you. We know that. Okay. But she can't make you feel that bad if you don't let her make you feel that bad. If you just look at it and say, "Yeah, mom's got a personality that's really hard to deal with."
When I've approached her, and I said, and I've told her, and I said, "Mom, we need to go for counseling. We have a miscommunication."
Forget it. Ed, forget it. She's not going to go. You know that.
Yeah, I know that. She told me she had nothing wrong. It was me.
Right. Exactly. So don't worry about that. You have one goal here before your mother leaves this earth. And that is just to simply learn to be civil and pleasant and tolerate her and recognize she can do all kinds of difficult to swallow things. But you don't have to be beaten down by him. You don't have to say, "I can't believe she says that kind of stuff." Do you believe that? Anybody who would listen to that kind of stuff would write her off. Well, you're not anybody, Ed. You're her son.
Yeah.
You're her son. Our Lord said, he's real clear here, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those." Now, he's making a condition here. He said, "You don't forgive others, I'm not going to forgive you." You got to let it go. You got to just say, "My mother is a badly damaged individual, in my opinion. She's had a miserable life. She's unhappy.
and she does all kinds of things that make her hard to relate to. I got it. Okay. I'll just try my very best when I do have contact with her to, well, in some respects, let her go in one ear and out the other. Okay. This comes right on top of my monologue. Did you hear what Ed said in the first minute of his call? I don't take drugs. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't do this. I don't do that. I don't do this. It's, in other words, I'm not all those things. I'm not a bad person, remember? And in the monologue, I said, how can this person say this about me? I don't deserve that. That's what Ed was saying. He was saying, if there was some kind of truth in what she said, I could accept it. Well, no, we don't like to hear truth either about us. But he said, I don't deserve that. That's part of why he got so upset. And then he said he cried for 2 hours. Okay, what his mother said about him, about his kids, he couldn't believe it. How could she think that? And I'm going to say, Ed, anybody can think anything. Welcome to my world of psychology, where you got to try to figure out how people think about all kinds of things, and you think that their thinking is way off, but they think their thinking is perfectly fine. And then that's the other point. To her, in her mind, she did nothing wrong. What's his problem? It is a standard characteristic of someone who can be very difficult that they don't know they're difficult. I dare say if they knew they were difficult, they wouldn't be anywhere near as difficult. It is a tandem relationship. The two go together. It's a dynamic duo. If I'm snotty and surly and disrespectful and hurtful in my words, what? I don't do that. I'm not like that. The problem is yours. And that set him off even further. So what Ed was doing was this. She says these things that I find hurtful. Notice I didn't say she says hurtful things. She says things that I find hurtful. Oh, Dr. Ray, you're playing with language. No, I'm not. Because conceivably, she could say those things to another son or daughter, and they would look at her and think to themselves, oh, yeah, Mom says all kinds of nonsense. Not going to get to me. I'm not going to shut her out of my life. I've lived with her for all these years. This is what she does. No shock, no surprise. Dr. Ray, what are you, trivializing it? Are you just saying it shouldn't bother him? Well, let me put you this way. It bothered Ed enough that he wrote her out of his life. That's a pretty big bother. So now she's saying, what did I do? What did I do? He's saying, oh, man, if you don't know, you're blind. Well, yeah, she doesn't know. She doesn't see it. If I were to ask her right now, what happened between you and Ed? I don't know. I don't know. He just got crazy on me. He just kind of pulled away and he's not talking to me. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what I ever did to him. Do you realize how much I hear that in therapy? When people do all kinds of nasty things, because someone's told me they do nasty things, usually their spouse or someone in that session, and they look at him befuddled. What? Who are you talking about? You're not talking about me, are you? I don't do that stuff. And then he said one other thing. He said, we need to go to counseling. No, you don't. You just need to forgive your mother and put the junk that she says in the past. That's all. And when she says similar stuff in the future, but she's hurting my reputation with other people. Well, okay, there is that component. Maybe you can straighten it out with other people. Maybe you can't. All right? That's part of the problem with that kind of talk. You can damage somebody's reputation, and that's a pretty serious sin. Ed says he goes to church twice a week. He goes to Mass. Okay. Well, you know, you're supposed to, before you go to communion, be in a state of forgiveness towards others. And if you don't, you're supposed to stay away from communion. So the counseling isn't needed here. What's needed is for Ed to recognize the way his mother's been, as he sees it, since he was 12.
Have you ever noticed how atheists always ask why God would allow evil, but they never ask why he allows goodness? They presume goodness creates itself somehow, therefore there's no one to thank for it. Thank you. But is that fair? The existence of evil is a great mystery. Even the writers of the Bible grapple with it. But it's another thing altogether to focus 100% on where evil comes from and 0% on where goodness comes from. If it's easy for me to say, why me, when bad things happen, why is it hard to say, why me, when good things happen? Evil isn't a thing, a substance. It's a lack of something, namely, goodness. Evil is to goodness what a lie is to the truth. It's a parasite. The goodness of God is a much deeper mystery than why he allows evil. I'm Patrick Coffin of PatrickCoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
Who may be baptized into the Catholic faith? The Catholic Catechism tells us that baptism may only be administered to a person who has never been previously baptized. When an adult is baptized, he undergoes a preparation for the sacrament called the catechumenate. The candidate for baptism is called a catechumen. The catechumen should be properly initiated into the mystery of salvation and the practice of the evangelical virtues. They should also be introduced into the life of faith, liturgy, and charity of the people of God by successive rites. Baptism of infants is, the Catechism says, an immemorial tradition of the Church. Church law urges that a child be baptized as soon after birth as possible, in order that the baby not be denied the priceless grace of becoming a child of God as soon as possible. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You're just so great. I love your show.
There is a positive to every negative personality characteristic. For example, take the characteristic that people fling around rather loosely. Narcissist, all right? That's a nice layperson's way of saying somebody's self-centered. But if you look at it from a clinical perspective, narcissism goes much more deeper than self-centeredness. But one thing nice about narcissists, they don't talk much about other people. You notice that? That's a good thing too, right? I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on this Look Back Friday, and the doctor is in. Colleen, who called from Washington back when, says she's grateful. Okay. What is she grateful for?
So I'm really grateful for God's mercy, and I promise it's not just that. I'll go ahead and tell you the whole story, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So 2 years ago, I went to a women's healing retreat, Bible-based. It helped me understand the depth of God's love and forgiveness, and helped us understand how to break our patterns of sin and to choose forgiveness, healing, and mercy through God. And I stopped blaming and focused on God for everything. And that was 2 years ago. And then fast forward to just this year's Mother's Day weekend, I spent it with my parents and my son opening up our family cabin, cleaning, et cetera, with Mom and Dad to help them out for Memorial Day weekend. And I was inspired to write a note, I, of course, brought Mom a card, but I wrote a note to my dad before we left. I thanked him for being my dad and for loving Mom and for always being there and letting us know that he was his wife, not just his wife, and for being her and our protector while we were growing up, and that I love him and appreciate him and how proud I was to be his daughter. And then, my dad and I had always had kind of a strained relationship, but since that healing weekend a couple of years ago, things got better and better with us. We just loved each other more and more. And unfortunately, the next Saturday, my parents were in an accident, and Dad died instantly, and my mom died a week later.
Oh, jeez.
When I went to their house, I saw that he had read the note, opened the note, and read the note. And I'm so grateful the way that God's merciful, and he asks us to be merciful and forgiving and loving and just to love people. And I'm so grateful that's, I mean, I miss my parents, of course, but
I'll bet you cannot. You cannot gauge, dear. You cannot gauge at all what you gave your father. Because I got to believe, like most dads, me included, when you have friction with a child, you tend to think the child doesn't care for you. You tend to think that the child looks at you as though, well, gee, why couldn't I get a better parent? And when you said what you said, you lifted off of him any of that father self-doubt with your letter. No question. And you know what else you did? You lifted a lot of guilt off of you, because I got a feeling, had you not done that, you would have done what many people do, which is, I was not as loving as I should have been, and now I don't have the chance to be loving anymore. That's a pretty good thing to be grateful for, dear, and that is far from one of the standards. Many, many years ago, when I worked at a mental health center, I had a mom whose 9-year-old daughter died of leukemia. Now, at that time, leukemia was much more of a death sentence for little kids than it is now. Mom came to counseling, in part because she was dealing with the grief of losing her daughter, but in part she was dealing with a tremendous amount of guilt. I don't remember if I recall the details correctly, but Mom would visit the little girl every day and be there as much as she could all the time. Well, this one particular time, the little girl, I believe, asked her mother, "Mommy, would you stay with me today?" And the mother said, "Sure, I will." And the girl fell asleep. And so Mom thought, well, I can go out for a little bit and run some errands and come back. If I remember correctly, the girl died while Mom was gone. Mom didn't know if the girl had woken up and said, "Where's Mom?" Or Mom wasn't there when the little girl passed. That just ate Mom up. It was as though it's nothing she could correct. One thing about grief is you're sad and it hurts. But with the passage of time, some of the pain dulls. The thing about that kind of guilt is you can't make it right in your mind. So what Colleen got when she wrote that letter to her father, is she said, "Here's what I love and admire about you, Dad." In essence, trying to heal that relationship. She had no way of knowing that her parents were going to die shortly thereafter. None, zero, zip. When St. Paul says, as far as possible, be on good terms with all people, I would suggest this. If you got folks in your life that are very close to you, relatives, friends, and there's some kind of rift or a history of conflict, to the degree you can, and again, they may not let you. I got that. I understand that. But to the degree you can, let them know. Let them know that you're sorry for whatever you did. Don't expect an apology from them. You're apologizing for you. Or you're just reaching out, touching them a little bit. That's good. Because you don't know. You have no idea. And some of the most intense grief I have ever seen from people who truly can't get past their grief is guilt grief. Guilt grief. Shoulda. Why didn't I? I could have done this. Sometimes I see neglect grief. You know what neglect grief is? It's when you're so busy and you're so involved in your own life that your mom or your dad or someone very, very close to you gets on the end of your to-do list. And you'll get there when you can, or you'll see them when you can, or you'll spend time with them when you can. And it's very easy to let that relationship slide until something happens. Especially with an elderly parent. Something happens. Then you look back at it and you say, oh my. Boy, what I wouldn't give now to have a chance to be with them again a little more. Why did I neglect that part of that relationship? I used to see my parents a lot. We'd go to breakfast pretty much every week. And her being Italian, you know, if you weren't there every 2 days, you were absentee. And there was always a difference between what my mom wanted to see of us and what we saw of my mom, even though I thought it was a fair amount. Okay. But after mom passed away, I looked back and I said, you know, could I have done more to meet mom at that point in her life? Even though I thought I was meeting her pretty good.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
I've been a priest for 31 years. It's a call to a total gift to Christ. It's a total gift of one's life to be conformed to Christ. You know, and that's why I felt it when I was a young guy and I was kind of getting into religion and understanding it more deeply intellectually. It just began to hit me with a great clarity that if this is true, if God is real and God is a supreme good, well, why wouldn't I give my whole self to God? Why would I get distracted by anything else, you know? Now, again, I'm not saying that should be true for every single person on the planet. That's the way it hit me when I was a young guy, was I want to give as much as I can, my whole self, to Christ. So there's something heroic about that, where you do eschew a lot of things. You say no to a lot of things so you can say massively yes to Christ and to his demand. I think that's a heroic quality of it.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Join today's discussion and engage with producers on the Ave Maria Radio Facebook and Twitter accounts at Ave Maria Radio. Respond to interviews and learn who's coming up on Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, and other Ave Maria Radio programs. Make it easier by downloading the Ave Maria app on your smart devices. Then just tap on the Facebook and Twitter icons to get plugged in on the things that matter most. That's the Ave Maria Radio app or at Ave Maria Radio. Build the church. Bless the nations.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Dr. Ray Guarindi here. Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday. 1 o'clock Eastern Time TV show, soon in its eighth season with all new episodes. Living Right with Dr. Ray on Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. Also on Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then the hidden slot, the right field slot. That's where you put the kid who can't catch the ball. Believe me, I know, I was there. In right field. Well, that's TV's version of putting you in right field. The 5 a.m. spot on Friday mornings. But I'm just so delighted to be part of the EWTN network. It's a dream come true. When I was younger in the secular world, I just so much wanted to be a host of a television show. It was like a career dream. Well, it happened. And it happened at the best place I think it could have happened. Leela, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, from New York, has got a little bit of a conundrum. She wants to evangelize. She's worried a little bit about how she comes off.
Dr. Ray, I know that you're not supposed to be boastful with your religion, and yet I find myself saying, somebody wants to do something with me Tuesday, and I say, okay, now I visit a homebound woman, I bring her communion, then I go to adoration so I can meet you at 12 o'clock. and then I say to myself, yeah, exactly. But you're not supposed to put your lamp underneath a basket. You're supposed to let it shine. And I try to strive to be an example. So maybe somebody might say, oh, gosh, maybe I should go to adoration. Or, you know, I hope that I'm an example and not a boaster.
Well, that's why I thought I was in a little bit of trouble, because it would be easy to be misunderstood. One of the motives for people saying, yeah, well, I go to a homebound, and then after I visit my aunt in the nursing home, I say 3 decades of the rosary right before I go knit shawls for the little old ladies that are there, and then I have to volunteer over at the church, and I have holiness time free between 1:15 and 2 o'clock. I can come over then. I understand that motive of, okay, well, let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me. I got that. All right. When our Lord said, don't put your light under a bushel basket, he meant the people will see how you treat others. They'll see how you love others. They'll see what you do. I think where you're struggling is the idea that, well, should I say some of these things so that maybe I could be throwing down a few seeds that they would think this? Here's my answer to that. One, you probably hang within a pretty religious circle anyway. Most of us do. If our faith is something we take very seriously, then the people we gravitate towards, by and large, also take their faith seriously. Unless it's our family who doesn't like our faith. But other than that, our social circle. So they know they do these things. They know that your faith matters to you. You don't have to keep reminding them. Secondly, let them see what you are like. So they say, what a beautiful human being Leela is. As opposed to, what a beautiful human being Leela is, because this is the sixth time she's told me she goes and visits her aunt in the nursing home. Right. Now, some of this stuff just naturally occurs. Let's say that they come over and they are asking you for something. You say, hey, I got to get going. And they'll say, oh, where are you going? Well, then you can tell them. You don't have to lie. You don't have to say, yeah, I'm going to go get into a protest about the spotted owl. You can say, yeah, I'm going to visit my aunt in a nursing home. Oh, that's really sweet. I'll bet she loves that. Yeah, she seems to. And then stop right there. Don't say, yeah, I go every Tuesday afternoon. Ah, see, you drift into saying, let me remind you. I personally, maybe this is just me, but it seems so very common among people who love their faith and who want to do good by the Lord to remind, and sometimes very casually, very, very casually. I've had so many people in conversations that somehow they're going to tell me their kid's in the seminary, or they're going to tell me they have a daughter considering a vocation. And it may or may not even be related to the conversation, but it got put in there somehow. That's nice. And I understand that they're pleased, and that's wonderful for them. But what is the motive? I didn't really address what she said. She said, and that's one thing bad about these look-back calls, I think about how I could have done it better. I hate that. About the only time I ever think that is about 92.65% of the look-back calls. She said, we're supposed to be a light, and I want to maybe share with them these things so that it might influence them to do these things. Call me a skeptic. I don't think so. People are not influenced to do things because you tell them what you do. That has nothing to do with it. I would be willing to say that a percentage under 1% would say, you know, when you told me that you go visit your aunt in a nursing home, that prompted me to go visit my uncle in a nursing home. The only people I think would really do that would be people who are predisposed to do that anyway. Faithful people who are trying to live faithfully, and they do a lot of good things, and this is one good thing they hadn't thought about. So in that sense, okay, I can see that. But I think, going by what our Lord said, You know, when you do these things, don't blow a trumpet before you in the byway. Don't go ahead. Don't wear your phylacteries real long so everybody can see them. Because our light comes from how we treat others. That's our light. That's by far the most powerful evangelical tool. That we, as Christians, and they know you're a Christian, they find you easy to be around. They find you listening to them more than their other friends listening to them. They find that you ask questions about their life and you don't go on and on about yours. They find that you show interest in their kids, that you're not prone to talk about yours 82% of the time as opposed to theirs 18% of the time. All of that, I think. Now, even at that, how much does that behavior influence people to become more Christ-like or to look into this Christian thing? My experience has been not all that much, all right? It may just influence them to say, well, the people who are Christians are some of the nicest people in my life. Now, that's a first step. And who knows what other thing could get them to look at the church, but at the very least, you're not a roadblock because they can say, yeah, you know, I went to church last Christmas Eve, and man, it was good to be back. And come to think of it, you know, Leela there, she's one of the sweetest people in my life, and I know she's a devout Christian, or she tries to practice it anyway. One other thing, it's just a thought here. Watch out for the adjectives. People will say, well, I'm a devout Catholic. I'm a serious Catholic. I'm a faithful Catholic. That has always kind of sat a little uneasy with me. Because while it may be true, I always have to ask, okay, what's the purpose in saying that? You know, I'm a Catholic. You could say that.
Yeah, but if you say you're a Catholic, Dr. Ray, half the Catholics don't even go into a church. More than that, 75% of them don't even walk into Mass.
Yeah, that's true. And they might not look at that as meaning anything. So you have to fluff it up a little more by saying, I'm a faithful Catholic. I'm a devout Catholic. Maybe you could say, I try to live my faith as best I can. You could say that. It's a little longer, but probably a little more accurate. Just a thought. Just a thought. I'm going to take a break because I'm a faithful employee of Ave Maria and EWTN.
Hi, how are you, Dr. Ray?
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Thank you, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
This Mother's Day, bless the Catholic mothers in developing countries who spend hours collecting drinking water, often from unsafe sources. With your support, Cross Catholic Outreach can provide these women and their children with access to clean, safe water. Help us lift the poor's burdens, protect their health, and restore their hope. Join by calling Cross Catholic Outreach at 888-766-2426 or visit crosscatholic.org/Ave Maria.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria mutual funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual fund. You can learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
As I am wont to do on these Look Back Fridays, typically I miscalculate. Regularly, I miscalculate. So we have a call up there, which is about 3 minutes long, but I'm looking at about a five-minute duration of the program here. And I do not want to stifle myself by being able to expound for only 2 minutes. So I'm going to hold off on that call and do what I often do. Quote from C.S. Lewis. This is God in the dock. I don't really know exactly what that means. I think that's kind of it's a phrase that was used. He says this: the Christian and the materialist, in other words, the person who says there's nothing other than the universe, hold different beliefs about the universe. They can't both be right. That's true. They can agree on a lot of things, but the Christian says there is a God. The God created the universe, and the God has certain things he's revealed to us. The materialist says, nah, nothing. Nothing of the sort like that. This is all just one major league big cosmic accident blow up, if you believe the Big Bang. The one who is wrong will act in a way which simply doesn't fit the real universe. Consequently, with the best intentions in the world, he will be helping his fellow creatures to their destruction. Doesn't this fit so much of what is gaining momentum in our political world? Because so many of the clashing beliefs on how we should deal with societal matters, problems, people, are coming from, on one hand, groups who believe there is no God, or if there is a God, he thinks like we want him to think. And groups who think, no, there is a God, he is eternal, and his word works. There's where the clash is. Wherever that comes, in so many aspects. So, I think Lewis at one point said this: if there is a God, and you deny that, you simply say, no, no. For me, there's not enough evidence. There's not enough reason to believe. I don't want to submit my will to something else that tells me how I should live. Even though we Christians know that's a better way to live, the person doesn't believe that. And the person says, no, there is no God. He doesn't exist. Then, if they're wrong, C.S. Lewis says, well, they're being delusional. A delusion is a false belief that does not respond to any kind of reason. There is reason to consider the existence of a God, and in my opinion, there's even more reason to consider that Christ was God, if you looked at it. But to say, no, no, I will deny that. I will not accept it. I view it a very different way. One could say, as C.S. Lewis says, that's delusional. You're denying a reality, and you're denying the overarching reality of all existence. Now, one might say, well, they're mistaken. Okay, but they're still clinging to their mistake. They're not in any way responding to anything that would make them reconsider their perception. And the other thing that Lewis points out in this quote is that if you're wrong, that there is more to the universe than just the universe, but if you're wrong about that, you think, no, 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 it's just the universe is all there is. Carl Sagan used to say that. All there is, all there ever will be. Billions and billions. That's what Sagan used to say. Okay. If he's wrong, then he's bound to live his life in a way that isn't the best for him. Now, he could be content, he could be happy, I don't know. But the same thing with Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking, I guess, just recently passed away. Hawking was absolutely brilliant. His mind was You could total all our minds. We can total up Hawking's. But if he was wrong about God, he missed it all. I don't care how brilliant he was about physics. He missed it all. I got to run. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I appreciate the company. Andrew, I appreciate all the editing you do. Walk with God. If you have children, hold them tightly. Trying to be a little more correct. By the hand.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.